Shoes. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. I'm your host, Lynn. And I'm here with my co-hosts, Robert, Bobby, and Dave. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Howdy.
Hello,
and...
Lynn.
Hello, Robert. And we're also here with our wonderful loyal listener and caller, Rick Wall. Hi, Rick. Well, I think he's eating his Chinese food right now. But it's still so good to have him here. And this is our last show before Christmas. Oh,
that's
my.
What we is, Talking Twilight Zone, chewing the scenery of this show.
Chewing the scenery. Biting off more than you can chew. That's right. It's our last show before Christmas. Christmas is only 12 days away. Oh, my God. Kind of snuck up a little fast this year, I think. I mean, for me, it did anyway. Came very quickly. But... Everybody done their Christmas shopping?
No.
Nope.
No. Nope.
Yeah, I'm not either, but I'm almost done. I only have like two more things to buy, and then I'm all done, which I'll probably get tomorrow. But it did come a little fast this year. But anyway, I do hope everyone has a good Christmas. It's only 12 days away. And as many people probably know by now, we're going to be doing, with the exception of two Twilight Zone episodes, we're going to be discussing two episodes per show. And with the exception of The Masks and Stopover in a Quiet Town, they will have a show all to themselves because they're, you know, excellent episodes. But other than that, the remaining episodes for season 5 leave a lot to be desired. So we've decided to do two per show.
You mean they were...
scraping the bottom of the barrel.
With those shows, huh?
a bit premature, you know, a bit prejudging the outcome of our reviews.
Yes, well, yes. I mean, that doesn't mean that everyone felt that way. But I would say, like, for the majority, you know, maybe. But we're going to do two anyway. We're going to do two, and we'll do The Masks and Stopover in a Quiet Town separately. But today, we are going to be doing From Agnes with Love, starring Molly Cox. And we're going to be doing Spur of the Moment, starring Diana Hylands. So the first one we're going to be doing, From Agnes with Love, I will turn over to Robert for an opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
James Elwood. Master Programmer, in charge of Mark 502-741, commonly known as Agnes, the world's most advanced electronic computer. Machines are made by men for man's benefit and progress. But when man ceases to control the products of his ingenuity and imagination, he not only risks losing the benefit, but he takes a long and unpredictable step into the Twilight Zone.
Well, jovial music. Wasn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Music was better than the episode, in my opinion. But believe it or not, this episode from Agnes with Love, it first aired on Valentine's Day in 1964. And wow, that's some crappy Valentine's Day gift. We've got the supercomputer named Agnes. She's having a major meltdown. And the geeky nerd of the century named James Elwood is called in to fix things. And putting aside the fact that Wally Cox is one of the most irritating actors ever, this story would probably have sucked no matter who was in it. But
hey, we have Mr. Drysdale as the boss in this one. So
that's true. That is true. Well, Coxon's annoying voice made it 10 times worse. In fact, he made me wish I was watching Mr. Beavis, and that's pretty bad. But Agnes, the computer, she begins to give Elwood advice on how to win the affections of his coworker Millie, who he's crazy about. Then Agnes starts giving him bad advice. But despite this, Elwood still gets a date with Millie, which he quickly screws up. And I'm sure that came as no surprise to anyone. But when Agnes instructs him to introduce Millie to a handsome coworker in order to make him look better, you'd think Elwood would get a clue. No, he stupidly goes along with it. And Millie falls for the handsome coworker. Oh, hum, hum, hum. So I'm wondering, is this over yet? No, it's not. We need to have the predictable climax in which Agnes proclaims to Elwood that she loves him. Wow, what an absolutely unbelievable clunker. They bring in another guy to replace Elwood. And, of course, the situation is probably going to start all over again. This was one of the worst episodes of Season 5. And Wally Cox, he actually worked with Rod Serling again in 1971 in a Night Gallery episode that was called Junior. And Sue Randall, she played Millie. She appeared in And When the Sky Was Open. That was from Season 1. And Elwood's supervisor was played by Raymond Bailey, as Robert just mentioned. He was in Escape Clause and Back There from Seasons 1 and 2. But we all know he was best known to most people as the heartless, money-hungry bank president, Melbourne Drysdale, from the Beverly Hillbillies.
Well, doggy.
Well, doggies. 1960s comedy, yes. And
you know, actually, Lynn, it seems to be a connection between these two. There always seems something that's going to repeat itself over and over again. Seems to be like with this one and the next one when we get to that one.
Really? The next episode we're going to do?
Because the computer programmer, you know, after the computer messes that person up, then another person comes in and that person gets messed up, and it seems to be an endless cycle.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, my rating is pretty predictable here. A zero. Big fat zero. I thought this episode stunk to the high heavens. And I can't stand Wally Cox. I'm sorry. I mean, when he was on Hollywood Squares, you know, he had a few funny lines here and there, but the guy just is grating. Grating. I can't take him. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Robert.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn. Well, you know, another series that Wally Cox is in, I'll play it real quick for you, is Mr. Peepers.
It's a Peepers, yeah.
Remember that one. And yeah, listen to the voice of the female in this clip, because you'll recognize her, because she was also on a TV series later on.
Oh, New York City, New York City.
Have you ever been there?
No, but I have friends there. Actually, a friend.
I see.
But she has friends. And she always said to me, my friends are your friends. So I have friends in New York City.
It's not like a friendly place.
Oh, it is, if you have friends. why don't you call her up while you're there? You see, she loves to hear you.
Why, I'd be happy to. What is her name?
Never mind the name. Just say you're a friend of Mrs. Gurney's.
Well, yes, but just to be sure, give me her name and phone number.
Henrietta Moore. And the telephone, Henrietta 3. Henrietta Moore. Just say you're a friend of Mrs. Gurney's.
You know, that voice sounds so familiar, but I can't get the name. Who was that?
I'll give you a hint. Aunt Clara.
Oh, my God, from Bewitched. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, right.
I knew the name.
I was thinking that the voice, yeah.
Yeah, the voice was so familiar, God. And then when you have Wally Cox with that voice.
Well, you know, who other actor uses that persona, too, is Bob Newhart. And you listen to Mr. Peepers, he's very close to what Bob Newhart sounds like when he did the Bob.
You mean
Newhart.
With the stammering, you know, with the stammering,
yeah, the
and stop, you know, pausing in between his words. Yeah, but the only difference with Wally Cox is that you know, that kind of Weasley voice that he has.
It's but, nasal, isn't it?
Yeah. It's that I don't know, deep, dorky voice. I don't know. Sounds like a computer programmer, I guess.
Well, you know, this episode very much reminds me of a precursor to the Big Bang Theory, where we kind of get geeks, because Wally Cox is playing kind of a computer geek in this episode, and the Big Bang Theory is about a bunch of geeks.
Oh, he was perfect for the role.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the whole question is, can computers have feelings? I mean, we see this concept used in other TV series. Movies later on, such as Blade Runner, Battlestar Galactica, Logan's Run, Star Trek, you know, they take the concept with this in. Probably need Dave's help here. Remember
Red Dwarf?
Yeah, Red Dwarf. Remember the episode from the original Star Trek where they had the war games? And remember the guy that invented the computer?
Oh, yes.
Dave's
yep. Daystrom, yep. Hence, well, later on, we get the Daystrom Institute later on in Star Trek. But, yeah, and remember how they inserted kind of knowledge for the computer to think and to do war games, but then it breaks down, kind of like in this episode, how the computer breaks down.
Ultimate Computer, I believe, was the episode.
And you know what I would have liked, and they probably could have done this if they wanted to, that the computer couldn't really know what it's like to be a human unless they could become human themselves. I'm surprised it didn't invent like some kind of harness or wire where you could talk to the computer. I guess being that era, they weren't that, you know, advanced in thinking that way. To where the computer could have taken over the person. I don't know if that would
help. I don't know. We'd already had a Twilight Zone where the grandfather turned himself into a robot. You know, the girl who the one where he fell down the stairs, and then
Uncle Simon.
I'm sorry, and then it was replaced by a robot, and that had his personality, and that was mobile, and that got pushed down the stairs.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
It would have been nice if they could have done something similar with this one as well. Also, remember the, not a Star Trek one I'm going to mention. Remember, Dave, the one about Zephyrin Cochran and about the cloud or whatever the alien was that he was telling the alien that didn't know what it's like to be human. And
it's
then
companion.
Yeah. Took the
yeah, part. Rick's your expert here. Well done, Rick.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's you know, this basically what this story is about is to, you know, I wish they would have went a little further with it. The concept, you know, I give it a 1 for the idea because of what it's used later on. But I was a little more kinder. I go to 1.5. You know, it's still poor, but there was elements of it where. You know, down the road, it's used in other TV series and shows. So, but yeah, it's not the greatest episode. I agree with that.
Yeah,
not that great. And they're trying comedy again, which, as we all know, comedy doesn't work in the Twilight Zone.
No, it does not.
So, okay, Bobby, over to you.
P-U-R-E-C-R-E-P, pure crap and nothing but. I'm not going to waste my time talking about it because I have better things to do with my breath. But I will say this, they would have had a much better, more interesting story and have better time spent by talking about Wally Cox. He's more interesting than the story he was in. Wally Cox was the exact opposite of what he played during his entire career. He was actually very athletic. He rode a motorcycle. He liked motorcycle racing. And he was the best friend of Marlon Brando. He and Brando were best friends. Talk about playing
really?
Against type. That's right. And Wally Cox, who doesn't look like he's going to expire early, dropped dead at 48 of a heart attack. And Brando was absolutely devastated when it happened. They were best friends. He was also, Wally Cox was also a master electrician. And he very much resented the parts that he was playing. He believed that it completely ruined his career because nobody would give him any part that wasn't like that, what he played.
Didn't he?
So he resented it his entire career, that he never went anywhere. Everything he tried to be, he was also on stage, he was in a lot of things, and they always gave him the part, same kind of part that he played when he started his career. So he was a very unhappy man.
And Rick was going to ask you something. What was that, Rick?
Didn't he have some patents on some instruments?
Yes, yes. I don't know what they were, though, yeah. He was an inventor, an electrician, and not even close to being the person that he played on screen.
Sounds like just being an actor was more of a novelty for him.
Well, yeah.
He wasn't everything else, yeah.
Which is probably why Brando gravitated towards him, because he found him playing against type to be unusual. But, I mean, that's not you have to understand actors, what actors are. What are actors? Actors are fake people. They are exactly the opposite of what they are. I mean, look at Rock Hudson. He was gay. Nobody knew it, although everybody thought he might be. And you have to separate the actor from what you see on screen, because they're often very, very different. And since he was a motorcycle enthusiast, and since the only funny episode in the Twilight Zone is Black Leather Jackets, he should have been cast in that. That was a natural. That would have made some sense. He probably would have done very well in it and made it even funnier. So they really missed a good opportunity right there. The episode is ridiculous, and as our co-reviewer at the Twilight Zone group said in his review, it absolutely has no business being in the Twilight Zone. This is absurd. I only have one question regarding this garbage, and that is, of course, we all know what computers are like today, and I realize that it's decades later, and we have computer screens. Exactly who was in that computer who was printing up all those cards that came up in order to talk to everybody? Because every time a little window opens, there's a printed-up card there. And I'd like to know how they manage, how a computer is supposed to be able to do that, since there was no screen there. So it would be nice to say that it was it foretold the future of what the world is like today. And, of course, the great irony today is that computers haven't fallen in love with people. People have fallen in love with computers. It went the other way around. So, yeah, obviously it's a zero. Even at IMDb and the people over there, like any kind of crap you throw at them, even they gave it a 5.6. So it's pretty much unanimous that it's embarrassing. And I feel sorry for Wally Cox for being – I never liked him either, but I don't take any joy in any actor being so typecast that his career is completely ruined by it. And it's just a damn shame that people don't let actors break out and be something different. I mean, he doesn't look the type. He's obviously too small to play any kind of – he's not Harrison Ford or anybody like that. But still, he should have been given the opportunity to expand a little.
Do a dramatic role or something.
Exactly. Mm. So it gets a zero, Lynn.
Okay, Dave.
Just very, very, very briefly, just before I get to these two, I wasn't here for the episode you did last time, Night Call.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the Gladys
that's
Cooper
right.
One. I did enjoy that. I thought that was very well done. That was good. 3.5. I mean, Gladys Cooper, you know, a legend, really, in some ways.
Fabulous.
But, so I did enjoy that, and I did enjoy listening back to the recording later, but that has passed. Let's cut about this one. Well, actually, I actually like Wally Cox. I remember as a kid watching some of his because he was from here in the UK. He was an archetypal sort of put upon little person, you know. Mm-hmm. and maybe here in the UK, I can't think of any names at the moment. Maybe even somebody like Mr. Bean, I suppose, Robert. You know, he was one of the first one of these sort of insignificant men, quote unquote. I was quite surprised at the beginning with the very heavy-handed use of the music, which to me, for all the world, sounded like Laurel and Hardy music. It was going dum dum dum, you know. It was really Laurel and Hardy music, which of course I suppose they were keen to set the tone. They did that presumably so that when you went in and saw the computer room, that wasn't anything of a forbidden planet, was it? It was a little bit a little bit more cardboard than that. So maybe they did that and they were playing up the human. You mentioned, Bobby mentioned about him dying at age 48. Sue Randall, who played Millie, died age 49.
Yeah, lung cancer, yeah.
Yeah, and when we get to talk about the next one, Diana Hyland, and that she died age 41.
Right.
So presumably on the set of Talking Twilight Zones, because they not only promoted cigarettes, maybe they all got, you know, in the contract you got so many dollars and 100 cigarettes, something like that. By the way, I'll mention it later about the budget. I'll tell you what, hey, Lynn, a bit of an innuendo in this one. Did you not pick any of that out? Oh, Lynn's muted at the moment. Robert, anybody else, did you not get some of the innuendo in this?
I wasn't really paying attention to it, no.
All right. Well, first of all, he's asking Millie about why did she introduce... he asked the computer, why did she get him to introduce Millie to the other programmer, you know, because he's got a sports car and this. It says, he's the guy with the good looks, the sports car and the big unit. And then later on at the end, when the computer confesses its love for the Wally Cox character, she goes, oh, come on, climb up here. Come on, climb up. Come up here and to me. I mean, it's very, unless it's my imagination, I don't know. But there's an awful lot of double entendre in some of the things that's said. Very strange, by the way, the computer, one of the things that you've quoted Star Trek a lot, one of the times that they've done in programs where they've found out whether, you know, like an android is an android or a real person, is the shortening of words, you know, cannot to can't and things like that. And this computer, to say it's very an early type of computer, and the printout, as Bobby was saying, was very... you know, very, very simple. The language it was using was not robotic at all. It was definitely not Cybermen type of speaking. It was very colloquial, I think the word is. So that seemed rather strange. But I think I'll probably stop at that. I'll give it a 2, but only because I like Wally Cox. And I think I agree. You almost have to judge these Twilight Zones with comedy in a completely different, separate case. It's almost as though every sort of 6 to 8 weeks they throw a comedy one in. I remember the one about the camera that took pictures and the squabbles between the different people on that.
Right.
Was done for comedy, and I never knew why. And of course, the biggest comedy one is the one with the Buster Keaton silent movie one where time travels. Yeah. Oh, and the one modern theme, did anybody mention it? I think Bobby was alluding to it about the other way around. Of course, the film that's just come out recently called She, where the guy falls in love with the voice on his phone, isn't it, Robert?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't see that.
You know, remember the one, Simone, I think it was, years ago, with Al Pacino?
No, not she, her. Is it her?
Her? Yeah.
Is it called Her? You know, the bloke who was in Gladiator played the consul in that, the River Phoenix's brother. No, 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 no. River Phoenix's brother, Joachim Phoenix.
Joachim,
that's it, well done. He's just been in one, I can't remember, it's called Shia, where he falls in love with his the voice on his thing. And one last thing, just to show that I'm up with it. Of course, the professor, Stephen Hawking, has just got a new computer voice, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And there's also a movie out about him, too.
I want to see that.
Right, yeah. Well, the thing is about when they first got his voice, this text-to-speech wasn't very well advanced. And it was an American software that they'd used. So it meant that although he's an English scientist, he got an American voice. And he's just had a new update now, but about 15 years ago, they offered him an update again. And they said, we can give you a more naturalistic voice. And he says, no, don't do that. Everybody, when they hear that voice, they don't think it's the computer. They recognize it as Stephen Hawking's voice.
Yeah, that's cool.
Can I interrupt here for a minute?
Yep.
The movie is called Her from 2013.
Thank you.
A lonely writer develops an unlikely relationship with his newly purchased operating system that's designed to meet his every need. Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams, Scarlett Johansson, directed by Spike Jonze, J-O-N-Z-E.
Yeah, I think Scarlett Johansson does the sexy voice of the computer.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, it gets an 8.1 at IMDb.
Oh, we're going to have to watch that. We're going to see that. Cool. All right. So, Dave, you said what is your rating?
I'll give it a 2, but only because I do like Wally Cox. Only because
sure.
I remember him from my childhood as watching his comedy series.
Okay. Thank you. Rick?
I don't remember that. I'm much too young to remember any of that.
Sure. Go ahead, Rick.
Another one by that comic genius by the name of, what's his name now, Rod Serling. Give it up already. You can't write comedy. Who told
Tell
you
me
you
that.
Could? Zero.
A zero?
Hang on, he didn't write it, though, did he? Are you saying he wrote this one?
I'll tell you in 1 second. Hold on. Written by. Yep, he sure did.
No, it says Agnes and Love. Bernard
Schoenfield. Yeah, no, he didn't write it, but he approved it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't write it, but he approved it. That's bad enough.
This is the last comedy episode, isn't the Brain Center of Whipples also a comedy episode?
Oh yeah. I don't know.
Or the Carol Burnett one, yeah.
I don't know if it's the last one. I mean, got Brain Center at Whipples and
Come Wonder with Me must be a joke, yeah.
Okay, well, Brain Center at Whipples is actually the last one, as far as putting the one up that's a comedy. But okay, well, so that takes care of this episode.
No,
thanks.
No, Ray Wall hasn't finished. We interrupted him, surely.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm done. Who said I was done? I'm done. I said zero.
Yeah, he said zero. That's my thought.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
You always do this to me, Dave. You accuse me of saying stuff when I don't.
Well, I was more sensitive that we might I might have cut you off with that interruption about it being a different writer.
Try to push your buttons, Rick. Okay.
That seemed to be the same thing with Rod. He was, for some reason, even though he couldn't write comedy, he liked comedy and he liked westerns.
Yeah.
And they put westerns in these too.
Yeah, that's right. And it is.
True. Oh, there might be a horse then.
Yeah. Yeah, he did like that, and war, stuff about the war. He was very, very into that. But it is true that he had an incredible sense of humor. I mean, he was they say he was a very funny guy. And he was very witty, he was very quick, he was sharp. But these episodes, he could have done better with that. But anyway, that takes care of this one. And now we're going on to the next episode, which is called Spur of the Moment, starring Diana Hyland. And I'm going to turn that over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
This is the face of terror. Anne Marie Henderson, 18 years of age, her young existence suddenly marred by a savage and wholly unanticipated pursuit by a strange, nightmarish figure of a woman in black who has appeared as if from nowhere and now at driving gallop chases the terrified girl across the countryside as if she means to ride her down and kill her, and then suddenly and inexplicably stops to watch in malignant silence as her prey takes flight. Miss Henderson has no idea whatever as to the motive for this pursuit. Worse, not the vaguest notion regarding the identity of her pursuer. Soon enough, she will be given the solution to this twofold mystery, but in a manner far beyond her present capacity to understand. A manner enigmatically bizarre in terms of time and space, which is to say, an answer from the Twilight Zone.
Answer
from
the Twilight Zone.
On a horse. That would have been cool.
Was that?
Ride on a horse. That would have been cool.
Oh, yeah. That would have been him riding along, giving the narration.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He was so cool. He could have sat on a tractor and he would have looked cool. It wouldn't matter. Oh, well, yeah. Poor Anne Henderson. Poor Anne. Yeah, she just wanted to enjoy this relaxing horseback ride in the country. But that quickly ended because this menacing figure appeared at the top of a hill and let out a chilling shriek in Anne's direction. Yeah. Suddenly, the figure, all dressed in black. She's all dressed in black. Of course, it has to be ominous. And she's riding a black horse. Oh, black, black, black. And she speeds down the hill, and she begins to chase Anne, who flees from her toward her home. Now, that sounds exciting enough, right? Well, maybe it would be if they hadn't immediately shown that the menacing figure was Anne herself in later years. Talk about spoiling the surprise. But, you know, that was letting the cat out of the bag too soon. Anyway, she was sure mad about something, wasn't she? Well, the younger Anne, she's engaged to a really good guy. But, she's still in love with this loser named David that her family can't stand. She ends up ditching her fiancé, and she runs off with David, who ends up becoming an alcoholic and turns her life into a pile of crap. Now she can never change the past, no matter how many times she chases down her young self. She can't change it. It is what it is. She screwed up her life. But, you know, this is far from a great episode. It has like this soap opera feel to it. And there was a little bit of overacting here. Diana Hyland, as the younger Anne, she was overly dramatic, came across as a brat who needed a lot of attention. The older Anne, that when she was the one that was chasing the younger one down, she was a bitter, excruciatingly bitter. And she blamed her father for her crappy life. Come on now. What was stopping her from dumping David? You know, but I guess it was easier for her to blame her pathetic life on someone else.
Well done.
I'll never go hungry again.
Well, apparently the older Anne is in some sort of time loop, allows her to see her younger self, and she indicates it's happened many times, so she's obviously in a recurring nightmare that may never end. Now, this scenario has been used, you know, a few times in the series. Reminds me of Shadow Play and Judgment Night. Both, you know, they deal with a person reliving a horrible scenario over and over again with no resolution. And I'm not a big fan of Diana Hyland, but I you know, I really didn't think much of her over-the-top performance in the episode, but I do, however, like Roger Davis, the guy who played David, the alcoholic. I mean, he was a good-looking guy who had a pretty decent career in TV and movies. He was in Dark Shadows, one of my all-time favorite shows from the past. He was in that for a couple of years. He also starred in the series Alias Smith and Jones. And he also appeared in an episode of Rod Serling's Night Gallery. So him I do like, but overall I'm not crazy about the episode, and I'm giving it a 1. And the 1 is mainly for Roger Davis, because I think he was a very fine actor. And now that goes over to you, Robert.
Well, you know, Lynn, some are into that dominatrix look that she's kind of wearing there with the black. Mm. Well, you know, you talking in the window in the first one there, Dave. I thought I'd add a little to this one. Ooh, yeah. Anyway, okay, who to choose, David or Robert? Hmm, it seems to be a question before Anne. Well, you know what? It doesn't help dressing all in black, screaming like a banshee, and riding a black horse. You know, story, yet another, you could say it was a rip in time, or it could be a parallel Earth, too. We don't know with this situation.
Yeah.
It seems to be something that's, like I said with the Agnes one, something that's going to continue till one of them dies, unless they are caught in that one time period where it just keeps looping over and over again, never to end. But something, you know, when I was a kid, I used to read with comic books, and they always talked about the parallel worlds in the comic books. And about indecisions, going left instead of right would create another world. It felt like a scene that was cut out of a movie. It felt like pieces were taken from past episodes, such as Mirror Image, Walking Distance, etc.
Mm-hmm.
If she wanted to succeed in talking to her past self, she needed to scale back the evil-looking banshee screaming tone she had in this. So... But what if we could make ourselves better when we want to present ourselves to ourselves? So I was kind of thinking this. First, she should have dropped the regular neutral look. You know, she should dress neutral looking clothes, drop the banshee screaming. Next, ride any brown or light colored horse. You know, go up to Anne and introduce herself. Say, hi, I'm you from your future. So she would have had a better chance than looking like one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
It was so insane, her screaming and flying down the hill like that. I mean, anybody would run. Just insane from the very beginning.
I would, too, if I came down that way. But anyway, boring, uninteresting. Yawning piece of crap, felt like pieces of stories thrown together. I give it a 1 out of 5.
So. Okay. Okay, Bobby.
Well, I got extremely lucky on this one. I didn't have to review it because, thankfully, I was in the hospital. And actually, I would rather have heart surgery and have a pacemaker implanted, so I didn't have to watch this. Unfortunately, yesterday I did watch it and almost put me back in the hospital. It's absolutely pitiful, and it's not only bad, and it's not only boring, but it's annoying, and there's no excuse for that. It's one thing to sit through an episode that's boring you to death. It's another thing to hear screeching in your ear and to actually be annoyed beyond belief. So it's just another horrible story. I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't remember back that far, but I was actually young in those days, and it's hard for me to believe that I didn't give up on the series. I just wonder if I kept watching it from week to week. I don't really remember because I just can't imagine at that age that I was watching Wally Cox and stories like this. So I can't, I don't know. I didn't own my own TV. I watched whatever my mother watched, but I can't imagine her sitting through it either. And so I don't know how many people were watching the series at this point, but there's really no reason to watch it anymore. It really is. It's just sad. It's really depressing. It shouldn't have gone here at all. So, yeah, I'll give this one a 0. zero because there's really nothing to say about it. There's a, you know, the only good thing about it is that eventually it ends, and thankfully I managed to avoid writing a review, and I'm not about to go back and do it. Lynn?
Okay. Dave?
Okay, a few things to say about it. First of all, I should have said that the last episode we did was obviously Series 5, episode 140. So we're up to, and that aired on the 14th of Feb, 1964. So we're at episode 141, and obviously aired on the 21st. By the way, the one we talked about before actually aired on Valentine's Day. It was a Valentine's Day episode,
yeah,
which may cut a little bit of a slack there. With the romantic thing of it. Anyway, this was obviously the week later. Well, let's hear it for the horse. I thought that white horse was one of the most beautiful horses I've ever seen. I mean, I don't know why we don't give some things for that. I agree with you about the
you
girl.
You can get the same thing by watching The Lone Ranger. You don't have to watch this.
Yeah, but the horse and the girl who played both the younger version of herself, 18, and then aged supposedly in her mid-40s, but they made her look a bit worse the wear for drink at that age. The Diana Highland character, 29 when this was filmed. But again, her acting wasn't really good. In fact, assuming the close-ups of the riding seemed to look as though it was her riding the horse, so she was obviously a better horsewoman than she was an actress. And what about that scene where she's playing the older woman coming up on the ridge of the mountain? I mean, that was straight out of Bela Lugosi, wasn't it? With the way she's holding a cape up there and screaming like a banshee. The actress I'd want to mention, not necessarily for how well she was in this. You mentioned the chap who played the father. You mentioned the other lad. There was the Philip Ober that played the father. I've seen him in lots of things, but not necessarily in any starring roles. He was one of these character actors. But the one who played her mother, Marcia Hunt, I've seen her in quite a lot of things. Very beautiful-looking woman, appeared in early John Wayne films. And she's still alive, age 97. With all these people keep dying, the Diana Highland died age 41.
The mother is still alive at 97?
97, yeah. Marcia Virginia Hunt, born October 17th, 1917.
Wow.
And she's still alive. And she was in quite a lot of films. And in fact, there's a picture on her wiki page. Let me just put it in the room. And she looks very much like Lauren Bacall as an older woman. There's a picture of her there as a grey-haired old lady just last year. So she's 96, and she just looks to me, if you hadn't to put a name, I would have said that was Lauren Bacall. So she's got one of those very finely nice, structured bone faces in the bone. So, I thought she was good. But one person that Robert is going to get a slap on the wrist for not mentioning, he should have mentioned one of our Doctor Who showrunners called Stephen Moffat, who loves timey-wimey stories. And this was a timey-wimey story, Robert, wasn't it? Because we kept fading back to what was present day into the future and back and so on. I thought that was quite well done. The transitions were fairly simple, but they worked. It's just that the acting was so poor. The story was fairly light. But we have a couple of people that come on this show week in, week out. They'll probably be listening. And they also like these timey-wimey stories. So, again, the voting's not for the acting. The voting's not for the story. The voting's for the horse, the horsemanship, and the timey-wiminess. I'm going to give it 2.5 for that. But in terms of the acting, it was pretty poor. And I mean, the sudden change of heart, you know, the girl saying, you know, to her fiance, by the way, she's only supposed to be 18. She comes in, you know, fraught from this, having seen this apparition. Nobody in the house offers her a brandy. But of course, then I'm thinking, oh, well, she's 18. They're not allowed to, because you have to be 21 in the States, don't you? And yet,
in 1963, you could be 15, have a drink.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
But I was going to say, her fiancé, the one she was actually having the engagement party for, the father offered him a drink, you know, after they'd all both been shaken up, and he was drinking at the do. So it's obviously one rule for the men and one for the women there, Lynn, unless he was supposed to be a good few years older. And, of course, girls did get engaged at 18 in those days. My sister Pamela was engaged, I think, at 19, married at just before her 21st birthday, I think.
Women got engaged a lot younger. They got married a lot younger back then.
Right. So, I didn't think the acting was very good. The story wasn't good, but I do like ones that have time travel in them. And as I say, the horse riding and the time travel, give it a 2.5 from me.
Okay. Rick.
Okay. First of all, I really don't think it was much of a time travel, as much as a time travel story as the future person haunting the past person.
Okay.
Yeah, alternate realities as well, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, just the future self haunting your past self.
Right.
You know, let's say if I were to meet my younger self and I'd say, get better at math so you can become a marine biologist like you want, not a loser like I am now. Anyway.
The young girl's time, if the older girl was in the younger girl, wouldn't that be a different time, or is there a space where time don't exist?
It's called the twilight zone.
It's yourself haunting yourself as a younger person, as I said. And you read comics, that's a common theme in a lot of 70s horror comics. There are a few movies, I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but there are a few that are based on stories like that. I really don't think it was as much as a time travel as you guys say. I'd give it a 1.
Okay. Yeah, it's about right. I mean, yeah, that's all I give it. It's a 1. You know, like I said, that was mainly for Roger Davis because I always liked that guy. That was a big
something I forgot. Something I forgot to ask, Lynn, was that in from Agnes, at the end, the girl, the blonde girl carrying the books, she looked a lot like Madeline Kahn. Now, did they state if Madeline Kahn appeared as an extra in that episode?
Somebody at IMDb mentioned that.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I wonder if that was.
They appear to be certain it was. That's what they said.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I never thought. Yeah, she does look like Madeline Kahn. That'd be interesting. Oh, well, if you go to IMDb, wouldn't it have her credits? That would probably be in there.
It depends on how big the part is, if it's a speaking part.
Well, but they do put uncredited. You ever see when you're looking up an actor or an actress, and they'll put their role and they'll say uncredited? It might be in there. Maybe I'll look that up. Maybe it was her. Yeah. Good question. All right. So we did 2 episodes in an hour. Awesome. Less than an hour, actually. Well, which doesn't surprise me considering these 2 episodes. But this is our last show before Christmas. Our next show will be on Saturday, December 27th at 5 p.m.
Yeah, and more misery.
Let me see.
And boy, folks, do we have a Christmas present for you after Christmas.
My God. We have Queen of the Nile.
Woohoo!
And what's in the box? Queen of the Nile and what's in the box?
Oh, please, I'm going to go eat now.
Sorry, that was a... I thought it was an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
We're not doing that one.
Oh, yeah, right. Skip one. Right, okay.
Yeah, we skip it because it's not really a Twilight. I mean,
Well, let me just mention the thing I was going to mention then, if I may, about that. I said earlier about, I was going to talk about the actual cost of these shows. When they put that film on, apparently, to buy it, to show it, they're allowed to show it three times. They paid $25,000 for the rights to show it after it had won some awards. But in the article I read about that, it gave the information away that currently, at that time, the average cost of a Twilight Zone episode was $65,000, which I'd never heard put in numbers before. So in 1964... the average cost of an episode, Series 5, was $65,000.
Probably true.
Excuse me for interrupting, but this person who looks like Madeline Kahn, is that his secretary? Is that the bar?
It's at the very end where she's walking down the hallway and she's carrying books.
Well, it says here, uncredited secretary, somebody named Nan Peterson. So they don't have her listed at all.
Oh, is that's the one that gives the chocolates to, and then the flowers to, and then the name tag to. She's sort of doing a Marilyn Monroe walking, wiggling down the corridor, carrying stuff.
Well, I don't know. She's not listed here.
Robert?
It's
the blonde girl that's walking down the corridor that Wally Cox hands things to.
Are we sure we're not confusing it with the girl that Wally had this thing for where she... he was giving her stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. We're not talking about that.
Yeah, I was thinking about the one at the very end where she's walking down the hallway. And,
it's the same one. It's the same girl three times.
Okay, well, I said she looks like Madeline Kahn, and I just didn't know.
I'm looking at a book here that I have called The Twilight Zone, Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic, and it gives the cost of everything that it costs, all of the costs of producing the show. And I'm just looking at one show in particular, Stopover in a Quiet Town, which is from the season 5. And total production cost, $55,522.90. So, yeah, Dave, you're right. The average cost was that much.
Right. Well, let me just put the link in the room. Let me just put the thing in the room because we've perhaps got a minute or two to spare. All right. Won't go into the dollar sign. Hang on. Let me. I just removed the dollar sign. I don't think it's accepting that, but the numbers there are in dollars.
Another reason why they could have stuck Occurrence at Owl Creek in there too was they might have been over budget that last season. Or they didn't have a script to put in there.
But,
I never considered a Twilight Zone episode. It was just something that, they bought and just stuck it in there and called it Twilight Zone for the rights of it. So.
Yeah.
Probably had a holiday.
But
went
it looks,
fishing. That's called a Gone Fishing episode. That's what I call it.
It looks to me like the average cost of a Twilight Zone episode from season 1 all the way up through season 5 was anywhere from $35,000 to $60,000. And,
Series 5 would have been the dearest, of course, because of just inflation.
Yeah, absolutely. Just out of curiosity here, I wanted to see something. I'm just looking for... Oh, here it is. Time Enough at Last. Okay, Time Enough at Last, $53,955 were the total production costs of that. So almost $54,000. So, yeah, it looks like the average cost was between $45,000 and $60,000. Looking through this book, it seems to go mostly there. The lowest one was like $30-some thousand. but they all go between 45 and 60. Yeah.
Now, just on that point, I don't want to belabor it, Lynn, but didn't you say that some of his friends acted for nothing? Was it Burgess
mm-hmm.
Meredith or somebody?
That's what
yeah.
I
they
said.
Did, they didn't charge.
Said,
oh, sorry. Ah, well done. So, I mean, how much would he have normally charged? That would have added another $10,000-$15,000.
Sure, it would. Yeah, he had a lot of friends who did the show for nothing, just because they wanted to be in the show and they wanted to work with him. Yeah,
or
Jack
scale,
Klugman,
whatever
I think
scale
he,
was back then.
Exactly, Jack Klugman, I think, worked for nothing.
And then all
or,
the forbidden,
or scale.
all the forbidden planet. Sets and gadgets they used to save the fortune.
That they used over and over again. Exactly. Yeah, that is quite true. I think he did a pretty damn good job with what he had to work with, that's for sure. It was meager, but he managed to do it.
Well, like I said, if we went to season 6, which I guess a good thing we didn't, it would have went into color, I think, because everything was switching into color.
Yeah, well, that
was the Twilight Zone went off.
Yeah, that well, Dark Shadows did eventually too. Dark Shadows started out as black and white and then went to color.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is about that. One of the things that's happened. I mean, like with you quoted Star Trek earlier. Now, admittedly, that was a couple of years later. Was it 66, 67?
Mm-hmm.
The very fact that they filmed that on film rather than. Well, I mean, they didn't have videotape at those days, but the point is that's given it that longevity because the fact that they've got the original prints, it meant that the original negatives, even never mind the prints, they could rescan them, and blooming heck, we've even got Blu-rays now of the original Star Trek, so it's given it a vastly longer life. Because of that, I mean, what was it happened with? I don't really want to talk about Dallas on this show, but if I remember watching Dallas, and then they suddenly tried to cut the money, save money, and it went from filmed to videotaped. And
yeah.
I mean, the point is that sort of show it was thriving on the after women watched it. I'm sorry if that sounds sexist, but after women watched it to see what fashions and clothes they were wearing. And
sure. It
had that high sparkle and high society thing about it. Once you saw it in videotape, it looked flat.
It ruins it. And it did the same thing with Twilight Zone, too. The six
yep.
episodes that they videotaped, they were crap. I mean, as far as the quality. It might have been some good episodes, but they just ruined the whole quality of it. It should,
right.
And that's why they stopped doing it.
Right. I mean, one of the things that Robert might, will probably say, if I don't beat him to it, was like in Doctor Who, one of the great things that happened, well, not great things, they had what's called a writer's strike, and they couldn't do studio footage. So the very first episode of the third Doctor, they got around it by hiring a film crew, and they filmed the whole episode. The thing is, that's the only Doctor Who from the early days that they can put on Blu-ray now because it had the quality. Because the thing is, the emulsion of the film is higher quality than videotape, and of course with computers rescanning it, you know, you print out from the negatives are stored very carefully. We should be asking Rick Wall this really, but they strike new positives from the negatives, and you've almost got a pristine print then, and
right.
then the computer scans that.
Yeah, Dave's talking about Spearhead from Space.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the only one that they can really transfer over to Blu-ray in its entirety because it was filmed instead of videotaped. So. Which
oh, Robert, your voice really does sound different.
It's on videotape tonight.
It's on videotape.
It's not live. It's that was it. It's not live. It's Memorex.
Memorex.
Oh, did you not? Did you have that advert in the States?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not fade away.
Ooh, yeah.
Not fade away.
Okay. Oh yeah.
All right, guys. We
well, Bobby,
are...
it's time to start. It's 6 o'clock. Just kidding.
We are at the, this is our latest.
Right, Lynn, a challenge for you. So you can end the episode exactly on 1 hour. See if you can manage it.
It's already 6:01 on my computer.
Well, 59:49 here.
Well, I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Merry Christmas.
5, 4.
Merry Christmas.
3, 2.
Merry Christmas, folks. See you on the 27th. Bye bye.